Thank you so much for having me, John. I mastered to internal medicine residency program.
What does it take to get into the residency of your dreams when it seems like all the odds are stacked against you? My name is John Arshadi, and I want to welcome you to the Road to Residency podcast. This is the show where we break down inspiring personal journeys of passionate physicians who had the courage and the commitment to take purposeful action to achieve their goals and serve their communities. Hello again, champions. Welcome back to another episode of the Road to Residency podcast. I'm John Arshadi, and today I'm here with Dr. Varun Thomas, who's an Indian national who studied in Georgia. Not Georgia in the United States. I'm talking about the country Georgia in Europe. He graduated last year in 2020 and applied straight for the match without even having his ECFMG certificate. He matched into internal medicine at Norwalk Hospital, associated with Yale University School of Medicine. Varun, congratulations on matching this year. You make all of this look way too easy. I just want to know how you did it.
First of all, thank you so much, John. It's not easy as it look. It's quite difficult what I have been through. But if I can do it, I think anyone can do this, all of this stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And we're going to talk about how others can do it for this year's match, future matches.
Definitely.
So let's rewind a little bit and talk about how you decided to study in Georgia from India.
So it's a very long story, but I think I will make it a little bit shorter one. So after graduating from the high school, I decided to go into med school here in India. Somehow I didn't get the seat here at that time. Then one of the doctor, my dad's friend, he's also a doctor, and he told me there is a country there and there's a really good med school out there. You should go in Georgia. I Googled about that med school, and I think I felt it's pretty good. And then I went there and I really had a great time there, studied well, Georgian, learn about the Georgian culture. So yeah, it has been one of the best time of my life.
That's amazing. And you had to learn a whole new language, just like people who come to, you know, study here for their USMLEs.
Absolutely. So they have their own Georgian language. So I have to learn all of them.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when we spoke before, you said that you've done rotations, you know, in Italy, in Turkey, in India, also in the United States. Tell me a little bit about how you found those rotations. How would somebody who wants to do rotations in other countries, how would they go about starting that?
Well, as you asked me first before that, why I went to Georgia, that's the answer I gave it. But I think when I went there, I see a lot of opportunities. I've started doing my joint conferences in different areas, and attending those conferences, you met so many professors, and those professors come from different countries back in Georgia. So I asked them, you know, I'm really interested in your study and in your field. Can I do a rotation in your hospital? They invited me over back in Italy, in Venice. I did my rotation in a surgical department there. And then during my summer holidays, I always came back India. It is always 2 months holidays, but I try to do 1 month rotations here in Delhi, in one of the best hospital here in India.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about your USMLE journey. You studied for the USMLEs during your medical school, am I correct?
Yes. So I started this preparation in 2018 summer, after the fall semester. And I started with the step one. I started with the, you know, basic stuff, biochemistry. And those things were not taught me well in med school, because biochemistry is boring. You know, initially I find out in the med school, like, you know, nobody ever try to tell me that how this can correlate with your clinical stuff. So one of the guy during preparation, Dr. Darko, he's from Kaplan Medical. So I started watching his videos about the biochemistry. I'll fall in love with biochemistry. He tried to make everything sense, why you are learning this whole cycle and why it's important as a doctor. Mm-hmm. And then further, there are, you know, other subjects we can talk about, pathology. We can go for Pathoma, Hussein Chapter, Then also the Goyan, like there are audios out there from the Goyan, old audios, but those audios are magic. While I'm running, I'm listening to those audios.
Right. That's awesome. And you had no direction or no mentorship or anything, right? You were the first person who studied for the USMLEs in your college, and you had to figure all this out by yourself.
Yeah, so I'm the first one to study during the med school. It was very hectic going with the med school. It was very difficult, but there are, you know, pages out there such as Facebook or Reddit. You found so many wonderful people out there. They are helping each other. So that's how I found my way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. And so how long did it take you to study for step one in total?
I think it took 7 to 8 months. So I started in August, studied a little bit in summer, and then took my exam in March. So around that time.
Great. And you took step two as well. Did you take step three?
No, I didn't take step three.
Okay, yeah. Good. And I remember you saying you have a crazy story about the OET. I'm excited to hear it.
So what happened with the OET is I took this OET after my step two CK directly. I didn't study that much. I didn't take it very seriously about this exam. Somehow in the reading part, I got it low score. And then December 31st was the last day to take it, this OET, to apply for this year or match into this year. So at that time here in India, there were like pandemic going on. There were like no centers there. Then I have to fly to different cities. At that time, there were some protests going on here in India. But somehow I was able to manage, give this exam. I went there, the exam hall was completely chilled at in something 8 degrees Celsius, which is something around, you can convert into Fahrenheit, maybe something 40 or 48 Fahrenheit in the exam hall. There were no heaters available, but somehow I was able to manage, pull it out, this OET, and able to get my ECFMG certification just 10 days before the ranking order closed.
Yeah, that's amazing that, you know, you did all this and you weren't even sure if you're going to get your ECFMG certificate on time, right?
Absolutely. It was very, very tense period at that time.
Yeah, for sure. I can imagine. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the conferences, Don. You told me before that you're ambassador of 10 conferences in Europe. How would a person, you know, who wants to expand their horizons, expand their experience, their CV, how would they even get involved in conferences?
So I started this becoming ambassador, or before that, I just started attending conferences to learn about how medicine grows. So that's a way only you just learn. So just day before yesterday, I attended this American College of Physicians, this 2021 conference. 3 days, like it was complete 3 days. I learned so many new updated guidelines about endocrine cardiology. It's important to continue to get your knowledge by getting these conferences. But so I joined this conferences, and then I started becoming part of those conferences as an ambassador and helping students to present their presentations, or even they as a participating, as a passive participant, they can learn about different techniques in the conferences. So there were like, I think one of the main conferences like ISCOMS in Europe, it's one of the biggest conferences, more than hundreds of people come from different countries there, even from US too. They present their presentations based on their field, and that will be graded by very highly qualified PhD doctors there. So it's very important as a medical student, you should continue to learn how medicine grows.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about how COVID affected your application process this year.
COVID was, there is a different type of stress has been given by COVID. Okay, there is a mental stress, I would say. So initially I was planning to take CS in April. I thought, okay, after my graduation, I thought I will take my CS directly and then I will prepare for my step to CK and my application will be ready by September 15th. That's a deadline for every single past years before 2020. So after the COVID came, then CS got canceled. I have 4 months. I have no idea do I'm going to even apply for this year or not. Because here in India, there were no Prometric centers were open at that time. It was very difficult, but somehow I was able to get manage and pull it up this stuff and able to take my step to CK just on 6th of October. And I got my scores on 21st. And that's a day you apply for applications.
Right.
And I got my score at 848 and I applied at 858. So just a 10 minutes margin.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was able to apply at that time. I applied into 100 programs and able to get interview around 14 interviews out of that. And all of them without ECFMG certifications.
Right.
So that's
amazing.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, initially I asked many people, what are the benefits to apply with ECFMG certification? Many people don't even apply. As IMG, don't even apply without ECFMG certification. You won't get interview. You will get one or two interview max to max. But in case of me, that wasn't a problem. I mean, I got really good amount of interviews. So if someone is having that doubt that their application is not completed or their OET scores are not there, then I think they can take it their OET after once they submit their applications.
Great. And I'm glad you said that because there's a lot of misinformation out there. You know, while I was in the Institute of Medical Boards and in Kaplan, I heard the same thing over and over again. And the truth is that, no, you don't have to have your ECFMG certificate. You don't even have to have all of your exams done by the time you apply. Yes, it'll increase your chances, but I wouldn't let that stop you from applying, right? If you know you're going to get this step two CK score, maybe not in October, but maybe in November, or you know that you're going to be eligible for ECFMG before the rank order list closes, then by all means, go ahead and apply. Don't let that hold you back.
Absolutely. I just want to add a little bit in that, Jas, that if depends on the year of graduation also there. If someone is really old graduate and they are applying with step one, that does not make any sense. It should be a recent graduate and most likely they have done with their step one and step two CK. That will absolutely not a bad idea. Okay, so if you have all of this stuff, step one, step two CK and OET, definitely that will increase your interviews.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So what rotations did you do in the US and how many letters did you get from that?
So after the step one score, I got it in April. Then I didn't have enough time to apply into university programs. So to apply into those programs and get a rotation, it takes time. I think at least 3 or 4 months to go into that process. So I got my step one score on April. After April, then 1 month of rotations I was having in my med school. After that, I took 3 months of period of rotations in US. So I applied all of them through companies because I didn't know anyone and I didn't know how to apply even in a university hospital also. But somehow I know that it will take time. So that's why I took it by company. All of them rotations were one of them in clinic, second one in clinic hospital, second one also clinic hospital. So all of them in internal medicine. And with that rotations, I was able to learn about a healthcare of United States, especially given me opportunity to learn how the patient care approach has been learning. You know, I'm learning from this patient care approach from the book, why it's different there. Because as I rotated throughout all of the world during my rotations here and there, India or Europe or US, I can able to compare the healthcare system, why all of them are different and why the patient-centered approach was there, which gave me so much interested in American healthcare system from that.
Yeah, for sure. And to clarify, your experience in the US was all hands-on experience, right? It wasn't an observership.
It was also elective. All of them were electives because I was student at that time. So all of them were electives.
Okay, great. So your letters of recommendations, are they all from the United States or did you use some from outside of the United States as well?
So I had a 4 letter of recommendations. One is from country Georgia, from my professor, internal medicine professor, and 3 of them from United States. And I think during one of my interview from New York, I would say, I don't want to name specific area, but one of the program director told me, you should thank your LOR. You should thank your LOR writer to what he have wrote for you.
Right.
So sometime it will come up and, you know, that genuinely affect how LOR writers are writing for you. So you should, while doing your rotations, always work hard, you know, come early, go late, always be professional, you know, those stuff matters at the end that will reflect back on your LOR.
Yeah. And how do you make sure somebody writes you a strong LOR? What do you recommend for people who, because I've seen people who get letters and they don't waive their rights to see them and they're just okay. Right. But yeah. How would you make sure that whoever's writing you an LOR writes a strong one for you?
That will depends on how you perform during your rotations. Suppose if one doctor is getting 10 students for the rotation, he will write 1 or 2 very specialized LOR. Otherwise, for other people, he will write just a generalized LOR, copy-paste LOR, I would say. Yeah. To get a very specialized LOR, you have to have a good story. You know, you have to have a good impact during your rotations while interacting with the patient. If patient is saying, you know, Varun, he helped me with this stuff. So during one of my rotations, 80-year-old African woman, she had a difficulty to get a wheelchair that is automobile, you know, with the mm-hmm. motor one, and she was very difficult to get that. So at that time, it was my 3rd rotation, and I was able to learn this whole electronics system, the EMR. And inside the EMR, I was able to find where her CVS is. So I got the CVS number. I directly called the CVS, what's going on with her? Why are you not giving her the wheelchair? Mm-hmm. And they will say, you know, of course we can arrange for her as soon as early. And after what happens 2 weeks after, she came back with the new chair. Yeah. And at that my attending was there. And she thanked me in front of the attending. So that makes a really good story, you know, like that makes a very impact. People remember those stuff.
Yeah.
At the end.
For sure. Excellent. And how much do you think research and publication plays into the MASH process?
So that's a very broad question, I would say. Mm-hmm. That will comes into depends which specialty you are applying for. Suppose if you're applying for radiology, any surgery, any competitive field. In that field, that will come as a big, big stuff. But if you're applying for internal medicine, very recent graduate, good score, then I won't think it will play as a very, you know, big factor.
Right.
So it depends on where you're applying, and mainly it depends on the specialty. Many of the university program, they try to orient students from a research background also. That's another factor. Suppose if you're applying into internal medicine, that is a university program. So they will see, okay, this guy is doing something with the research and publication. So we should give him an interview. So that guy have extra chance to get an interview from the university program.
For sure. All right, let's talk a little bit about the interview process. This year was a little bit different than the rest of the years because everything was virtual. And so how did the virtual interviews go for you? And do you think you got out of it as much as you would have in a in-person interview?
Of course, there are advantages and disadvantages of the virtual interview. So for example, now I'm going to that hospital. I don't know where is that place and how that locality is, you know, around that area. But there are also advantages too. You don't have to travel. You are safe somewhere, you know, sitting in your home and giving interviews. And also depends on the person to person. If some people, you know, prefer this computer-based interview or some, you know, in person. But I think in person is a better one. You can able to, you know, see how hospitals looks like and how inpatient wards or how ambulatory medicine works there. So it's a good advantage there if you are, you know, in person. But I think this year is also going to be most likely a virtual interview, as I think as a American College of Gynecology, they have announced that this year is going to be a virtual interview for that candidates.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I don't know for sure, but I have a feeling that this is going to be the trend now. Most of the interviews are going to be virtual interviews, even after COVID has passed, just because everything is becoming digitalized. And it's becoming a lot more cost effective for everybody because they don't have to travel so much everywhere. But then, like you said, you know, you don't get to see the actual campus, which is a downside.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yesterday's, you know, I attended this American College of Physicians meeting. There were like very big, big professors, you know, like big professors from like very prestigious universities. All of them are, you know, giving this interview, this presentations on this Zoom, you know.
Right.
It's something new for them. Like a whole 3 day were like completely on Zoom. Like even Anthony Fauci also came. Like everything is on Zoom.
Yeah.
So it's completely new normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were headed there anyways. COVID just really sped things up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like that for the foreseeable future. Is there anything, you know, if there's one piece of advice you would give somebody who's applying for the 2022 match, what would it be?
I think start early. Don't be like me, I would say. I mean, that's the most important thing. Arrange everything in a plan. Suppose when do you going to take your step to CK? When do you going to take your OET? Especially if you are in US now, it's most of the things you can manage now because their pandemic is very controlled now, I would say. Here in India, or if you are living somewhere where pandemic is out of control, then in your hand, it's very difficult to control the situation because the OET exam is not going to open. OET exam is not going to happen. Then the pro-matric centers is going to close. So it's out of a situation, but you know, take your exam on your time. Then if you have a free time, then try to take your step three also. If you are especially old graduate, that's gonna improve your interviews too.
Right, for sure.
And then also, I just want to add, also, you know, especially for the PS and also for CV, start early. So these things matters. If you have a really good PS, a really good CV, that will program coordinator, especially who, you know, go through this whole application stuff, because program director, they just see the superficial stuff, whatever they have program coordinator or under residence or chief residence, they have marked there. But, you know, go through your PS, take time, you know, it's really good to have a really good story in your PS that matters. Don't write that, you know, I'm a first generation doctor or something, because these stories repeat and repeat, repeat. They get bored out of these stories. Yeah. So don't repeat these stories. Make a unique story why you came into medicine and why that is related to whatever field you are applying.
I absolutely agree. And one of the things that I tell my students is about the personal statement is that, number one, start early, like you said, because you are going to end up rewriting this thing like maybe 8-10 times. You might have written something now that you look at it in about 2 weeks and you'd think, well, what was I thinking? And start all over, right? So you want to start as early as possible. The second thing is exactly like you said, you don't want to have a generic statement saying that, you know, I always wanted to be a doctor as a child, and I got into medical school, and then I, you know, my passion for medicine just grew from there. That's all that happens to everybody, right? It's nothing unique. You want to have a story that's specific to you that nobody else can say, right? At least the majority can't say.
With the personal statement, always to have a good story. Story is everything in this world.
Right.
If you have a good story, everyone will attract it to that story, you know? So I started thinking about my PS 3 months before, like, you know, while doing something, while cooking something, or while listening to something, or while running to something, just thinking about what I'm going to write or what I'm going to just, and if I get some idea, I pull out my phone and I type it inside the Notion. Like there's a
note app.
Yeah, app there. You can just write down your bullet points there. And I write down every single time, whatever I get some ideas. And then and yeah. 2 months before I started, you know, working on PS as a big stuff. So I personally, you know, like for me, I personally suffered from stuttering, like severe fluency disorder during my middle school, then high school. Then somehow in the med school, I just started, you know, learning about myself. That's a reason I went to med school too, just to learn about myself.
Right.
And just able to connect myself during my med school. That was one of the best thing I have done.
Yeah.
Understanding myself. And that was one of my story.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that, because a lot of us, you know, we have trouble recognizing or at least admitting our flaws, right? And so when we are able to say, hey, this is a problem, and we start looking for solutions, then, you know, we start to grow, and it shows. It'll show in your personality. It'll show in everything that you do that you've grown from that. It's very important. And, you know, I have a lot of students, I have a lot of people who I mentor who they're still resistant to, you know, to admitting that, okay, maybe I could do this a little bit better. I could do that a little bit better. And so it's very important that you go in this with an open mind and you make the necessary changes, whatever it is. And I really liked your, what you said about the personal statement, putting it in the Notation app, because that's something that I also recommend to people is, the personal statement, it's not something that you sit down and you write it once and then you're done, right? It's a formulation of ideas that pop up in your head over time. And these ideas can be fleeting. If you don't write them down, if you don't record them somewhere, you'll forget it. So the second an idea, no matter how insignificant you might think it is, write it down somewhere And so then you take all of these little notes and then you put them together and you create a story out of that. And I think that'll really help you instead of just trying to sit down, write it once and then be done with it. And you want to get as many people as you can to take a look at it, to edit it, but don't let everybody's opinion affect you. It's still your personal statement, right? And everybody has their own opinion. What you really want to get out of it is if there's anything that they can point out that you might have missed, you fix that, but you don't try to create your personal statement based on everybody else's opinions.
Definitely. I think, try to make it that personal statement which attract 70% people, because you will never able to attract 100%. Okay. There is always going to be a different part of your story. Some people say, he's completely flawed. You know, why we should even take a look? Okay, that's for them, right. But make a story that attracts more people as much can. And then always try to look your personal statement as a third perspective view, as a third person. Try to remove you from that story and then see from the program director's view, how does this look like? Do I want this guy as my resident? If you see that, then you will definitely make a good PS and overall, good impact out of your PS.
All right, Varun, I thank you for being on the show today. We got a lot of good information out of this, and I really appreciate it. If anybody wants to contact you, if anybody has any questions, where can they get a hold of you?
So anyone can contact me by my LinkedIn. So you can just put into the stamps down below my LinkedIn ID, and I will be there. And anyone can directly contact me, and I'm there for them. It's really hard journey, but I have been through this journey most of time alone, because I have to figure it out. But nowadays I try to help as much many people who are going to this journey, whether I'm telling them how to do questions or whether how to do rotations or those stuff. So if anyone want to contact me, I'm there.
Absolutely. So I'll put down the link in the show notes. And guys, I want to emphasize this: if you have any questions at all, if you have any concerns, please reach out to Varun, or you can reach out to me, or reach out to somebody, right? You shouldn't be going through this alone. It's a long process. It's an arduous process. And going at it alone isn't going to help you. So reach out to somebody, and we'll be there for you. One of the main things is that people think that others don't care, right? They think, oh, he got into residency and he's not going to care about me. That's not the case at all, right? So just reach out and we'll be able to help you out for sure. Varun, I really appreciate your time. I thank you for being on the show. And I know we're going to get a lot out of it. I hope to see you soon on another episode.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
If you haven't already, please rate and review the podcast. Share it with your friends and get this message out there. Because this is a time where a lot of people are skeptical and they're saying, I'm an older grad, I'm an IMG, I have trouble with the USMLEs. There's no way I can compete. What do I do? Well, we want to show you that there is hope. Actually, right now is the best time to match as an IMG. Our match rates have gone up from 48% in 2010 when I graduated medical school to 61% in the 2020 match. That's a significant jump. And as a matter of fact, more than 25% of the U.S. healthcare system is made up of international grads. So know that you can do it. You will do it. Just don't give up. And I hope to see you in the next episode.